This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello and welcome to episode 59 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod, the world's greatest podcast called Dream Pod, officially. My name is Tom and I am joined once again by Mr. Mike Phelan. Mike, how are you?
Hello, Tom. I'm not too bad at all.
Excellent. Been up to much in the two months since our last episode?
Yeah, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You know, trying to avoid the heat. I'm not a very heat-orientated man, so hiding in the cool corners in the house.
You've been playing Spirit of Speed at all?
I, funnily enough, I haven't been playing Spirit of Speed. No.
The only reason I ask is because last time we did a podcast, we told the listeners that we'd continue our story or our conversation about flags of the Ottoman Empire. I believe.
So,
if all our listeners are ready, let's crack on with flags of the Ottoman Empire.
So I believe the Baghdad Protectorate was the most interesting of the flags. Sorry, we're not actually doing it, are we?
No.
I think I'm on the wrong podcast, chap, so I'll leave it there.
And that voice you just heard is our latest addition to the DreamPod editorial staff and podcast team. His name is James Harvey. Welcome, James, to your first ever episode.
Thank you very much. It's fantastic to be here.
No, it's great to have a new voice. I know the team is growing ever slowly all the time, but it's always good to have a new person on the podcast who can bring their own tales and own kind of viewpoint to the Dreamcast. Let's
get the first one out of the way, Tom, first before you start sort of giving me some praise that might not be due at the end.
let's just talk a little bit about you, James. Who you are and what you've done in the past, and what kind of brought you to the Dreamcast. So the floor is yours.
Cool. Well, I'll try and make it as quick as I can, really. No, I've a lifelong gamer. You know, from Commodore 64 all the way up, really, to sort of current gen. But the Dreamcast really was the first console that I kind of got into pre-release, if you like. I mean, it was the first one that was kind of, you know, saw everything from Japan and was really super excited for everything. And yeah, that's why it's so special for me, really. It was the first console that I, you know, it was kind of, I claimed it my own before it came out. And if you want to use the word fanboy, I think it was the first console that I'd sort of associate that term with me for it.
Yeah.
So I was 15, I think, when the actual console got released. Went out on my birthday, actually, which was a couple of weeks after launch, and bought it, and spent all my money on the Dreamcast console itself. Didn't actually have any money left over for any games, so managed to survive on 3 demo discs until Christmas Day, where I had Sega Rally and Virtua Fighter. And then my obsession with Dreamcast kind of grew from there. There's, you know, so many firsts for me with the Dreamcast. I mentioned before, and obviously my first article on the Junkyard was around Toy Racer and online gaming on the Dreamcast. And as someone who didn't come from a PC gaming background, being able to experience online gaming for the first time, you know, blew me away at the time. And ever since the Dreamcast then, you know, online gaming has been really my kind of my chosen thing to do as far as video games is concerned. So yeah, I got into sort of when the original Xbox came out, I started doing a bit of freelance reviews and so forth for a few different magazines. There's a local magazine in South Wales, just, you know, one of those sort of free magazines you pick up in the supermarket. So started doing a bit of reviews for them, and then that kind of got me into some of the PR lists and so forth. And then by the time 360 came out, I was doing sort of regular reviews for a few different websites here and there, still doing stuff for print. If I'm honest, back then it was just an avenue to get some free games and get some games early, which is always nice. But yeah, I've always enjoyed writing about games and stuff. And then that sort of carried on with current gen stuff. And my most recent stuff has been with on the Switch with Switch Player Magazine, which is awesome because, as you guys probably know, you know, the amount of physical magazines that you can get these days is next to nothing. And again, that's a huge part of me growing up as a gamer in the 90s was, you know, going into newsagents, flicking through magazines, official Dreamcast magazine and all that sort of stuff. So seeing your stuff, your work in print is really rewarding. And yeah, with Switch Player, that was a big draw for me. So for those who don't know, it's a Patreon funded magazine that comes out monthly, focused on Switch games, and yeah, that's kind of the very condensed version of my sort of history and where we are today.
Excellent, yeah, very varied and obviously quite a knowledgeable chap when it comes to different generations and not just Sega consoles, but across the whole board. Really, it was interesting you mentioned Switch Player. I know of Switch Player, and I think I follow them on Twitter. When we first started talking about you coming on board at the Junkyard, one of the links that you sent me to one of your articles that you'd written was a review of Gear Club Unlimited, the racing game on Switch. And I'd actually read that prior to speaking to you via email. I'd already read your review because I was looking for reviews of it prior to buying it myself. So that was a bit random. Because you never look at who's written something, do you, on the website? No. So it's just kind of odd when you see, oh, I've read that before. I didn't realize it was you.
So it is always nice when you hear that, though, because you feel like, well, at least someone's reading the things that I'm putting out there. It's not just I'm not just writing to myself every now and again.
I saw something on the Dreamcast Junkyard Facebook group a while back. Someone had put someone posted some photographs of Retro Gamer magazine, an article about the Dreamcast that I'd written. And I was like, that's cool. Someone's, So, yeah, great to have you on board, James. I'm sure you'll bring a lot to the table, especially when it comes to Switch stuff, because we're going to talk a little bit about the Switch in a bit. But what we'll do first is we'll talk about some games that we've picked up or played on the Dreamcast or on the current-gen systems. Mike, I'm going to come to you first. Have you picked up anything on the Dreamcast or otherwise?
I have. So I'm still on my... people who are regular listeners to the podcast will know on my quest to complete the Dreamcast set. And my latest pickup is Musupe's I'll start that again. Musupe's Choco Marker.
It's always good when you can pronounce the games that you buy.
if I had to only limit myself to ones I could pronounce, most of my games I wouldn't be able to have. Musupe's Choco Marker, which is a Japanese exclusive puzzle game. I've actually reviewed it already for the guide, but I wanted to pick up the actual physical release. It's all right, actually.
You know you're in too deep, Mike, when you're buying games like that you can't even say the name of and need to describe it in layman's terms to someone else.
It's pretty much all the ones I got left are like that now. I think all the ones that make any sense.
Can you describe the game to us? How does it play? What do you do?
It's sort of a... Not really.
Good start.
It's got a weird sort of mouse creature, which is the main character. He's got some weird haircut as well, which is like... Yeah.
That's what a great you USB. Is,
what you actually do is put it on a shelf and never speak of it ever again. But it looks good.
It's what I do in most of my games, to be fair, but this one I actually have reviewed. So this is that annoying point part where I've reviewed so many games, I can't actually remember what the game is. And in my head, I'm getting it mixed up with Dissessen.
It's an easy thing to do, mate. That's an easy mistake to make.
It is, but you see... I've done so many reviews in the last year, 2 years. I literally dream Dreamcast games at the current time. And I swear half the ones I dream about are made up in my head.
It's funny you mentioned dreaming about the Dreamcast. I had a dream the other day about I put this on Twitter. I dreamt that I had a VMU, right, that had a slot in the side that you could put an SD card in to expand the size of the VMU.
Yeah.
How random is that? Like, it's just a random part of the dream. And then I woke up and I tweeted about it. Sorry, Mike, carry on.
That's all right. So, Choco Marker is an interesting game, which I will remember how the actual plot of the game goes soon. But apart from that, I've picked up a few other little bits and pieces here and there. I don't know if I've mentioned in the last podcast, I picked up some of the Canadian releases for Dreamcast.
No, you didn't, but I'm interested to hear about those.
Yeah, so there's in Canada, the games were released, but because of in Quebec, obviously, everything has to have French language on it as well. They came bundled with French language instructions on the back of the case.
That's really weird because I bought a game like that recently as well. Sorry, yeah.
Is it a pack of four by a chance?
No, it wasn't. I bet you it was from the same eBay seller though.
Almost certainly. Yeah. So I think he's had quite a few sports games basically.
Yeah.
But he had quite a few. Let me guess, was you won baseball by a chance?
No, I bought NFL 2K1.
Yeah, I got that as well. Yeah.
So are these instructions? Is it just like a sticker on the back, or is it like actually printed in French?
Instructions. Yeah.
It's a separate instruction manual, just in French. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
But obviously, I think a lot of times when people bought them, they've obviously thrown them away. So it's not the easiest thing in the world to get without having a sealed copy.
Is it in the sort of NTSC style?
Exact same as the American game. It's a normal standard American release or North American release, but it's got these extra language instructions in the back. Mm-hmm. And a guy on the Facebook group has been in contact with me. He's compiling the whole list of Canadian releases and which games came with these instructions.
Oh, yeah.
So the new guide will have that in as well, which is interesting.
I thought it was interesting as well, Mike, that I don't know if you noticed this, but the instruction manual in French was actually all black and white, whereas the US one, as in the actual cover of the game, was in colour. So I thought they obviously didn't care that much about translating it. It was the cheap and cheerful, get it done and chuck it in the box.
I think instruction manuals are weird for Dreamcast full stop. I think a lot of North American releases, a lot of them are black and white anyway, and some of them are just randomly full colour. I know we're always used to having black and white over in Europe because no one cares about us. But the American releases tend to be, or in other consoles, it seems to be colour, and the Dreamcast ones seem to get left behind a little bit. Mm. Japanese ones are amazing. Some of the Japanese instruction manuals, the artwork is so glorious inside them.
Yeah.
But apart from that on the Dreamcast, I said I bought a few other random bits, but no one wants to hear about some random browser from Japan. on modern gen consoles. So I bought a game a week ago, and it literally is actually taken over my life to the point where I think I actually might be going insane. The game is Manx TT, not Manx TT. That's a Saturn game. Isle of Man TT on the
Xbox One. All right, okay, yeah. I've seen this. Is it by Milestone?
Yeah, no, it's by Killerton. Killerton, the ones who did it after Milestone, wasn't it? The WRC games. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was going to be a cheap and like quite sort of a throwaway game, which I would probably play once and then free trade in. But it's actually really good. The graphics are amazing. It's the full Isle of Man course is on there. It looks gorgeous.
It is hard as nails, though.
It is. Oh my god! I literally cannot get round a track without crashing.
Yeah. I think I took about 30 races before I managed to finish one without actually falling off. And but the AI is brutal as well. If you fall off, you've got absolutely no chance of finishing in the top three. No. It's insane.
I've had to put the settings down to basic for everything. It's impossible. And then they've also got the sidecar, which I think you put me in a direction of, James.
Yeah.
Which is, I played with the wife yesterday, and it's hilarious, but literally impossible. Every single corner, sort of up on our side, on the sidecar.
So does player two have to control the person in the sidecar?
Yes.
That's interesting. Oh, yeah. Wow. See, I'd seen this game on the store, but I just assumed that it was like a knockoff of... Because I play a lot of Ride 2. And as I've mentioned before on the podcast and on Twitter, I am a motorcyclist in real life, IRL. So I do like my Ride 2. And I just assumed that this was kind of one of those, like a Valentino Rossi-style game where it's kind of just the same engine, but with a different kind of wrapper around it. I didn't realise it was by a different developer. Maybe I'll have a look at that.
I think I haven't played a motorbike game for years and years. Probably the last motorbike game I played was probably Suzuki All-Star on the Dreamcast. Trying to ignore Ducati World quite a lot there. But I like it. The thing is that my family's got history of sidecars. My dad, when he was first got with my mum back in like 1950s, early 60s, they used to have a motorbike and sidecar. And so my dad was massively into sort of like sidecar bits, and we'd always sort of watch the Isle of Man sidecar races. So it was great idea to let's do this on the Xbox One, sidecar, wife in the sidecar, me in the motorbike. And literally, we got to the first corner, she leant the wrong way, and I was off on my side. It's hilarious. It's pretty good. But no, the game itself is actually really well done. I was quite impressed with how well it was done. I bought it at the same time, or a little bit before, the Mega Drive collection and Street Fighter collection. And I've got to say, I've been playing it a lot more. But it's one of those games where it's so hard that you want to keep on playing until you get it right. But it feels like a rally game almost, in terms of the fact it's like it's longer races, it's you against the track rather than sort of against other racers. So it's good. I like it.
On the topic of the Mega Drive collection, I know that Kev Mason did an article on the Junkyard recently about the about that release. What are your thoughts on it?
I've got to say I'm a little bit disappointed because I think for me it seems to be quite laggy. I don't notice lag. I don't notice lag at all in games usually, but I can see that there's quite a bit of lag from what I can tell. Whether that's because I'm playing on a normal PS4 and it's better on the Pro, I don't know. I would hope that wouldn't be the issue. But the updated graphics, in terms of the fact when you put the filters on and you can do it to the, they look gorgeous. The way it actually displays on screen looks absolutely amazing. And the lineup of games is decent, but in all fairness, it seems to be every generation we seem to get the same game, and everyone gets really excited by a Mega Drive collection, but it's the same games. You know,
I kind of agree. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't buy it on the principle that I've got Mega Drive collections on other consoles that pretty much have these games on them. Yeah. Why would I buy
it? I was the same. I pre-ordered it initially when I heard it came out because it's the same every, you know, you hear something like this, the nostalgia kicks in. It's like, yeah, Mega Drive, awesome. Let's get a pre-order in. And yeah, as time went on, I was just thinking, do you know what? I'm probably not even going to have time to play these, or at least to have the desire to sit down. And, you know, when you see these sorts of collections come out on modern consoles, at least sometimes you've got all the achievements or the trophies that are going to sort of give you that little bit of incentive to go back and revisit something for the billionth time. But even those have been really poorly executed as far as the newest collection are concerned. Like, some of the games don't have achievements at all. Some of them have got just kind of one achievement for finishing the whole thing. And it's just... I just can't be bothered, to be honest.
There's a challenge mode which allows you to sort of select certain levels and games, which is quite good. Some of the games I haven't got past first level in the past, so it's quite good to see later on in the game. But it's just it's just one of those things where Sega, we all love Sega, and I think with Shenmue, everyone sort of again got into the big love with Sega. But there's some little bits on there which just annoy me, like Beyond Oasis is on there. You can change the region. But every time you pick a region, it still comes up as Beyond the Oasis. Now, unless my memory is failing me, Beyond Oasis wasn't called Beyond Oasis in the UK. It was called Story of Thor.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it does seem a little bit like money for old rope, to be honest. That's just my opinion. I'm sure a lot of people are happy with it, but I won't be making a purchase myself. James, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, I'd like to see them do something like Nintendo did with the old NES classics, where they kind of did the remix, where they did, they modernized a lot of the NES games with challenge modes and things like that. You know, Sega, they've got so many good IPs from the 80s and 90s, and I think it would be great to see something like that. And you know, that way you only need to put half a dozen games on it, you know, Sonic, Altered Beast, a few other things, and make some challenges around them.
I think the amount of times that they've rehashed these collections, though, and put them out either on like one of those mini Mega Drives that are apparently not very good, or on a disc, or on a cartridge, you know, or whatever, it kind of cheapens the whole kind of experience. You know, it's like... Yeah. It's just flooding the market with their own products over and over again.
And there's not enough extra content either. If you look at the Street Fighter Anniversary Edition, the museum mode on that is glorious. You know, I mean, every single track from every single game is available to listen to. It's got amazing histories, biographies, and it's really, really good. The Mega Drive ones don't have any of that kind of stuff, and I think it's frustrating because Sega fans are so dedicated, and you know, after several years of, let's face it, not very good games, we still love Sega, but yet we don't seem to get the repayment from them that we deserve.
At the end of the day, you know, with all of these sorts of they're not even remasters, they're just kind of re-releases in many ways. I think people like us generally, you're never going to beat the experience from plugging in your old hardware. And I think, you know, yes, the nostalgia will get enough people to make the purchase in the first place. But I mean, it's the same with Dreamcast stuff, right? I mean, there was the Dreamcast stuff that came out on Xbox 360 that was great for a little bit. But essentially, you want to be holding that Dreamcast controller. You want to be hearing the annoying beep when you turn the console on. You want to be hearing that disc drive like it's going to about to take off your desk. And I think I'm all for using old games and making new challenges out of them. I mean, Sonic Mania, that's another great example. You know, I mean, yes, it's not necessarily something that could run on a Mega Drive, but it looks like it could, and it's got that feel about it, but it's new. So yeah, it didn't really. Gosh, we went way off topic here. But
at the risk of going even further off topic, I'd like to see something new from Sega. Not necessarily like a Dreamcast or a Saturn collection, but maybe just something like a Mega CD collection or a 32X collection. That is something I would buy.
But the thing is, Tom, is that I don't understand, because obviously they've got the new Sonic Racing game announced as well. And from what I can tell with Sonic, the new Sonic Racing game, is that it's just Sonic characters.
Yeah.
Now, the last two racing games have been amazing. They're some of my favourite games of all time. I love Transformed. I love All-Stars Racing. But what the biggest appeal for it, from a lot of people, was the fact it wasn't just Sonic characters. You know, no one wants to, every single one, to have, you know, Cream racing against Cream, or racing against, I don't know, that bee. What's it, Buzzy the Bee, whatever his name is.
Oh, God knows.
It's, you know, Sonic characters aren't as loved as Mario characters. They haven't got the strength that Mario have in terms of being able to release a franchise just based around Sonic characters. I'm a massive Sonic fan, so I say this as being someone who loves Sonic. But
you're just bitter, Mike, because you haven't got all these crazy Japanese characters from all these Japanese games you've got on your shelf and not in it. That's the only reason you're upset. It's just Sonic characters.
Admittedly so.
Would you like to play as the amoeba from Lack of Love?
Oh, that'd be amazing. I love Lack of Love.
Maybe it's a hidden character. Maybe or a Game Genie code or Action Replay or something.
But it's weird, though, the fact that Sega's biggest strength is Sega, the brand Sega. And they still don't seem to be able to get it right, and don't seem to be able to use the brand. You look at something like Yakuza. I've been playing Yakuza 6 at the current time, and some of the biggest appeal of the game is going around and seeing the arcade machines and stuff. Yeah, the game itself's great, but having the arcade machines to play and just the sort of the Sega love. And I think sometimes they're so easy to release games based on Sonic, where it's never really been that strong a franchise.
Well, at the risk of this turning into the Sonic Hour, the Mega Drive Collection Hour, have you been playing anything else, Mike, apart from those games? You did mention the Street Fighter Collection as well.
Yeah, Street Fighter Collection. I enjoyed Street Fighter Collection. It's a good game. The problem is, Street Fighter Collection for me is I've got all the games on Dreamcast, and that includes Street Fighter 2. So I sort of it's a bit superfluous for me.
Is that the matching service game, Street Fighter 2 for matching service?
One on the Dreamcast, yeah. One on Dreamcast. I've got on Dreamcast. Obviously, the one on the, they got all the versions of Street Fighter 2 on the collection, but, you know, who wants to play Street Fighter 2, the first release, when you've got the last one? It's a difficult one for me.
The best thing about that Street Fighter collection, though, is that it means more people can experience just how terrible Street Fighter 1 was.
Funny thing is, I played Street Fighter 1 on the Spectrum, and it was so terrible. I wish they'd included that as well. That'd have been amazing. Color clash on the...
Okay, cool. Thank you for that, Mike. James, any pickups on the Dreamcast or on current gen?
I've bought more stuff on Dreamcast in the last few months than I have done in many, many years, probably. It all started when I bought a Dream Pi initially, and that kind of kick-started the whole I need to buy every single online game, which granted isn't that many. I already had quite a few from playing online back in the early 2000s, but I picked up Worms World Party, which was awesome. Cool. Played a few games of that with PC Wizard and Shu online, which was a really, really good experience. And it's still, I mean, those games age really, really well anyway, but it's still great fun to play today.
I loved how on your article about Toy Racer, like PC Wizard contacted you on Twitter and said, oh by the way, it's me who holds it.
Yeah, one of the only ones that Shu didn't actually do. I picked up, so a couple of years ago, I remember seeing a load of Dreamcast games on eBay, you know, brand new sealed Dreamcast games for like £5 to £10. And I kicked myself for not picking up some of them. And then I saw the prices of them have steadily started to increase. And I wouldn't call myself a collector, although my wife would probably disagree. But I just like to own games that I enjoy to play and that I've got some sort of nostalgia or something with. But I bought Pod 2. Bought it brand new and sealed just to open, just to get all the collectors riled up out there. But I don't know, part of the experience for me, I think, is opening those old new games for the first time.
Definitely.
Which is kind of weird, I know, when you could have bought it for like 5-10 quid cheaper than you actually paid. But I think I paid like $12.99 for it, brand new and sealed, which is just insane. So yeah, never played that before, although I do seem to remember playing a demo back in the day. But yeah, I had a few races online. That's really cool.
It's really good online, isn't it? It surprised me actually how much fun it is online. When I played it, there were two different lobbies going on, so there was loads of people playing at once. It's fantastic. On the topic of sealed games, though, it's a nice surprise sometimes when you order something on eBay and it turns up and it's actually sealed and it was never mentioned in the auction or the article or whatever that you bought it from. I got Demolition Racer, the NTSC sort of exclusive. It's almost like Destruction Derby, and that was like £3 or something. And when it came, it was sealed, and I was just like, wow, this game obviously was produced in the States. It's made its way over here to the UK, in all its time of existence, almost 20 years, it's never been opened, and I'm the first person to like look through this manual or handle the disc. It's just like, it's sad, I know, but it's also quite...
Tom, you know. we are really sad, but that is exactly what goes through my head. Literally verbatim, that's how I'm thinking when I'm opening this game. It's like, I'm sat there, my wife is looking at me like I'm some... freak, and I'm literally saying out loud the words like, this hasn't been opened for 18 years, this disc has been sitting in this box for this long, and I'm the first person to open it, and she's just like shaking her head next to me thinking, why have I married you,
kind what of a thing. Loser. Yeah.
But no, it's part of the whole, it takes you back, right, to when you buying these games new in the first place. Just we've gone off topic on every other thing, so we may as well do it here as well. talking of new sealed games, I remember about 4 or 5 years ago, my best mate was getting married, and I was his best man, and the night before, we were going to have just like 4 of us. I'm pretty sure I sent you a screenshot, a photo of this about 4 years ago, of us all kind of sat on the floor playing Dreamcast 4 player on something or other. I'm going to have to try and dig this tweet out now. I'm pretty sure I did send it to you. And you replied. I'm pretty sure you did as well. But anyway, the point of the story was I needed some controllers because I only have ever had 2 controllers back in the day. And off eBay, I remember buying, and they were in mass supply at the time. I bought like 2 brand new Dreamcast controllers, and it came with like 2 brand new rumble packs as well, and it was like £12 for everything. It was just insane how cheap everything was not that long ago. And I feel like in the last sort of 12-18 months, and Mike, you'll probably know this better than any of us, I feel like prices have certainly started to edge up a bit now. Which is why if I see a sealed game now that I'm semi-interested in, I'll just buy it anyway. And on that note, one of the other pickups I had was, how do you pronounce it? Is it Floygen Brothers? Floygen Brothers?
Floygen Brothers, yeah.
Floygen.
Haven't played it yet. Still have it here sealed on my desk, but it was like 11 quid sealed. So it was one that I was kind of had a bit of intrigue around. So
it's an interesting game, that, yeah. Huygel and Meugel Floygen. That's what the names are, the two brothers.
I did a bit of reading up on it, and all the seasonal DLC is available now as well to download from back in the day. So that'll be cool.
Another thing that we can attribute to PC Wizard.
Well, I don't know. I need to hold my tongue now in case I get that wrong again.
No, it was. Yeah, this is going to become the PC Wizard half hour now, isn't it?
And then I bought Maximum Pool just because it was, again, an online game that was, I think it was US only.
I've never played that one, actually. Is it any good?
Yeah, it's really good. I get that. This was one that I bought. I actually bought it from a seller in the US, and it only cost me about 14 quid delivered from the UK, from the US, sorry. And that one, it wasn't sealed, but it was pretty much brand new. I mean, the disc was mint and everything. So, I had a few games online. Nothing to write home about, but it's just the novelty factor of playing on a console from 1999 online against other people. Some cool modes on there rather than just sort of straight pool, which is good. And then, based on what Mike was saying, I bought NFL 2K1 because I know this might be a bit of a scoop, but I know that's going to be online soon. Mm-hmm. The netcode is apparently all done, according to Shu. It's just a case of when the next DreamPie update comes out. But I'm a big American football fan, so it made sense for me to pick this one up as something to play online. And yeah, I bought a sealed copy from probably the same seller as Mike, which was evidently a Canadian copy that had the French instruction manual in the back. So yeah, that's my pickups. Oh, and I bought a Dreamcast mouse, which I've never had back in the day either. But I played some Quake 3 online and just got absolutely destroyed trying to use a controller.
So
went back to get a mouse, which is cool. And then modern stuff, I'm reviewing a few Switch games at the moment. Icy is the one. I'm not sure if you've heard of that game.
Yes, I looked at that this morning on the eShop. Is that the sort of the side-scrolling, like, beat-em-up style thing?
Yeah. It's been out a while on other, I don't know if it's on other platforms other than PC, but it's definitely been out on PC for a while. It was very well received on PC. It's very good, actually. Have you played Superhot at all?
Yes, I have.
The kind of vibe I get from it, not the gameplay, but the vibe I get from it, with this whole, there's something going on, there's like a backstory with the computer AI talking to you kind of thing, is a similar sort of thing in Icy. So I've not really got into it too much. I've put a few hours into it, but it's pretty good so far. It's pretty enjoyable. So my review should be live in the next week or so for that one. But yeah, I think the Switch in general, again, I share your sentiment really with the eShop, and I find it difficult to review games objectively for the Switch sometimes, because there's just so much recycled rubbish on the eShop that I find it difficult to kind of review them in isolation, because to me, it doesn't matter whether it's some shovelware on the eShop or a AAA release, it's still advising someone to purchase a game on a Switch, you know, one thing over another. So yeah, I'm interested to see how that one turns out anyway. And then, yeah, finally, the only other thing I bought was the new Destiny 2 expansion, which came out in the beginning of May. I'm a huge Destiny player. I've put about 2,000 hours into the two games combined. Yeah. So it doesn't leave me much time to play anything else these days. But yeah, just getting through the new expansion on Xbox.
Cool. Destiny is one of those games. There are several franchises, big franchises on the current gen systems, such as Dark Souls, that kind of thing, that I've never actually played. Destiny is one. It's one of those titles that seems to me that if you didn't get in at the beginning, there's probably no point trying to get into it now, because it's just moved on so far. Do you know what I mean?
I think it depends. If you can get in with a group who can kind of help you get up to speed, I think you'll be surprised. For me, it's the closest that I've experienced since sort of Phantasy Star Online to make this a bit more Dreamcast related. It's that kind of, it's got the whole, you know, get into a group and go and do some dungeons kind of vibe to it. I used to be a huge Halo fan, so it was kind of a natural progression for me initially. It's just never experienced anything quite like it, really, despite all its flaws that you've no doubt heard people complain about.
Mm. Cool, nice mixture there, James, as well. I'll quickly, briefly jump into some of the stuff I've picked up and played. On the Dreamcast, the only thing that I've picked up, which is actually of any worth any note, is the Gran Turismo 2 Gleam disc. I did have this back in the day when I had my original PlayStation. It went when I sold my original PlayStation. Sorry, my original Dreamcast, and got a PlayStation 2. I saw this one on eBay fairly cheap, so I snapped it up, even though I've already got the beta version that allows you to play like a load of other PlayStation games on Dreamcast. It's just nice to have the actual cardboard sleeved official version of Gleam for Gran Turismo 2.
I meant to send you a link to this, Tom. I don't know if you saw. At the moment, there's some guy on eBay selling. He's selling basically a ripped version of Gleamcast and the game that it's emulating or it's allowing you to run together in a double jewel box with Dreamcast branding on. So it's like a Gran Turismo cover, but with the Dreamcast sort of strip on it. I thought it was quite interesting.
It's interesting, but I mean, basically, that kind of thing is. It's no better than a copied disc, is it?
I didn't mean it as it's interesting as in it's a very cool thing. I just thought it was some guy trying to make 15 quid out of just selling a few bootleg CDs.
Yeah. One of the interesting things about the Bleem disc itself, the actual physical item, is the around the edge of the disc, there's this kind of like silver rim, and on it is some wording that's you wouldn't even think twice about looking at it, but it's actually quite sort of interesting and humorous. It's like thanks to like various people. One of the things it says is, let me see here, it says, okay, special thanks to the neglected but forgiving friends, spouses, significant others of the above for being patient and not killing us, the folks at Sega for making a great console and being cool enough not to sue us, Sony, even though they are suing us, and then a lot of other people. And then just on the box as well, there's loads of little things that you just wouldn't notice unless you looked into the small print. At the bottom on the black, it says on the back it says, Bleem is not licensed by, affiliated with, approved of, or even particularly liked by Sony Corporation, its affiliates, subsidiaries, friends, pets, distant cousins, or evil twins. The same goes for Sega, although they're generally nicer about it. So I just thought it was quite a cool little detail that they've put onto the packaging for Bleem.
I do remember seeing that, thinking they're being a bit punchy for a company that's treading along some dubious trademark line and so forth.
Yeah, and on the back as well, it does say that it's compatible with the Bleem Pod, for use with PlayStation controllers and mem cards, which, and the Bleem Pod, for those who don't know, is an item of hardware that was supposedly coming along with the Bleem release, which was like a little dock that you could plug into the front of the Dreamcast, which would then allow you to put PlayStation 1 and joypads and memory cards into it, so you could use your existing PlayStation peripherals. Obviously, that never came out, but yeah.
I remember the Bleem Pad had the dual analog stick on it as well, and I was wondering how that would actually even work on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, I don't think it ever actually came out. I think it's only kind of a concept, because I think they were shut down before they could actually launch any of this stuff. I wonder if any prototypes exist anywhere in like someone's attic or cellar or something. That'd be interesting to see. On current gen, I have actually picked up quite a few things since the last podcast. So I think the last, as I said earlier, was about 2 months ago. So that's given me plenty of time to waste a ridiculous amount of money on gaming items, much to the chagrin of my girlfriend. I did actually take the plunge and buy a PlayStation VR, and I am incredibly impressed with what I've seen so far. The games I've got, I've actually, when I bought it, it came with a couple of games, and then I didn't realise that a lot of the games I had on my PS Plus account also had VR options. So my library of PS VR games is actually quite large. So the ones I've played so far are Super Stardust Ultra VR, Drive Club VR, Motocross, Motor Racer 4, Resident Evil 7, Super Hot VR, Doom VFR, PlayStation Worlds. I think there's a couple of others as well that are just like download-only titles, like Race the Sun, and what's that one called? The Kitchen Demo. That's pretty good. Wipeout as well. Wipeout, the Amiga Collection. Stunning in VR. Absolutely brilliant. If you've never played, I don't have access to a really powerful PC, so I can't use like Oculus or anything like that. This is perfect for someone like me who's got a PS4 Pro. And really good sort of jumping off point into VR.
I was blown away with PSVR when I first tried it. It was my first VR experience as well, and it was it's quite funny actually, because I remember thinking this is so good, I'm going to play it all the time, and I've literally not touched it since launch really. But I think that's just more because of the practicalities of it all than anything else. I think that when they start making these headsets wireless, it's going to be incredible. That's the biggest pain in the ass at the moment, is just trying to set it all up with cables dragged across your back and everything else. But the horror games are just like, nope, in VR. It's just horrific. Have you tried Until Dawn, Rush of Blood?
Oh, yes, I've got that one as well, and I've got the two little wireless, like, holdy things, what are they called? With the lights on the top.
Yeah, I can't think of the name of them now. The wands.
Move
controllers.
Yeah, that was...
Move controllers, that's it, yeah.
That was brilliant. I really enjoyed Until Dawn, but I'm super excited to see where VR goes from here. I think it was really did give me that feeling of like, you know, this is new, this is exciting, this is something that I'd never experienced before. But yeah, it's the graphics obviously aren't quite there. The PS4 doesn't quite have the horsepower to push out the high res stuff. Have you had any motion sickness at all, Tom?
No, a couple of people mentioned this on Twitter. I've never actually experienced motion sickness, so I'm not familiar with what it feels like. So
I did. I had it really bad. I've had a PSVR for several months, and I had to sell it because I can't play them. It really as soon as you get it, once you have it, you sort of, whenever you play it again, it feels off. So it's a real shame because I love the PSVR.
I'm totally fine in VR. I don't get any motion sickness as long as my character isn't moving, as in if he's in a an airplane or a car or as something that's moving around me. But if the character is walking or something, and obviously I'm not physically walking, that really screws me up. But like I was playing Eve Valkyrie, and obviously you're just doing kind of, you're in space, you're flying at stupid speeds, you're going upside down, and I was totally fine with that. But if I'm physically walking, my brain just can't cope with that.
The thing for me was I played through Drive Club VR. I played every single track a bit for hours and hours and hours, and that was fine. I played Dirt Rally VR, which is a great game, but because you have to focus a lot more, obviously it's a rally game, so you have to focus in every single corner, it completely messed my head up, I think. And so I was fine with cars, and I was fine with even planes or anything at all. But Dirt Rally was the one which did me in because of the fact it's such a twisty and, well, rally game, isn't it, really?
It's interesting you mentioned like motion sickness and stuff, because back in like the sort of the early 90s when Atari were doing a lot of research into the Jaguar VR, that is one of the things that people complained about. It was motion sickness. And I wonder how much more susceptible people would be to motion sickness on a console, like, vastly nowhere near as powerful as the PlayStation 4. And obviously the screens would have been far lower resolution. So it's just interesting to see, or it's interesting to think about how the VR from sort of the early mid 90s would have compared to what we have now at a consumer level,
Imagine a Dreamcast VR. Imagine what would that have been if we had a VR headset for the Dreamcast.
Oh, I can't imagine it would have been very good. You know what I mean? It would have been very good.
Res will obviously, have you played Res on the PSV?
No, that's a good point, actually, because Ross Amazing mentioned game. That I should play Res. The only sticking point I've got with Res is that it's, I've only seen it download only, and it's £25, and I'm just a bit, am I going to spend £25 on a download only game? Now, if it's physical, I'll get it, but not.
I bought the download, so I've still got the download, even though I can't actually play it because I ain't got a headset. But it was amazing. It's just, I love Res anyway, but properly sort of, You get completely encapsulated in the world. It feels like you actually are there. It's the only game I was really completely 100% bought into, which is amazing because the graphics are nowhere near as good as realistic as they were as other games. But it's amazing experience.
Good point. Yeah, Res probably would have been quite good on the Dreamcast VR. This thing that we just created out of nowhere.
Yeah, Cosmic Smash would be amazing.
18 wheeler sat in the intro.
Save it for next April, boys, and we'll do an April Fool's
good
on
point,
it.
Good point. Yeah, I'll delete all this from the podcast. No, on the Switch, picked up a couple of different games. I picked up one called Hollow, which is a first person horror game. Pretty good, actually. Ikaruga, which we'll speak about shortly. A game that has actually taken over my life in the last couple of days is Pixel Junk Monsters 2. I played the original on the Vita, I loved it, and Pixel Junk Monsters 2 is more of the same, but with fantastic graphics and just a really charming little tower defence game. Great stuff if you see it. I also played Mario Tennis Aces, the online demo. That's really good. I'm pretty sure that'll be a cracking game when it comes out. Overtones of, what was the tennis game we mentioned earlier? Sega All-Stars Tennis. It's really good, so hopefully that'll be That'll be a decent tennis game when that launches. So yeah, that's my pickups, PS4, Switch, Dreamcast. Guys, let's move on to some news about the Dreamcast. This is something we've touched on in a couple of episodes in the recent past. That is the new releases from Josh Prod. The release lineup has been revised slightly. We reported a couple of months ago that Okinawa Rush, that game was coming to the Dreamcast in this release schedule, but that has seemingly disappeared to be replaced with something called Bang Bang Busters. There's also Fate of Black, which we knew about. Another World, or Out of This World, if you're in America. The Escapee and Battlecrust, the shmup. Ross was meant to be joining us on this episode. He's played Battlecrust extensively because he's doing a review for the Dreamcast Junkyard, so we can't really speak much about that because I actually haven't played it yet. However, Mike, you've played the Escapee. We've spoken about this one at length, actually, on the previous episodes. But for those people who haven't listened to those episodes, Mike, could you tell us a little bit about the Escapee?
Yeah, so the Escapee is very similar to the flashback style of game. So it's a horizontal, side-on perspective, sort of a mix of adventure and platforming. Mm. Although a lot more adventure this time, I think, than flashback. Came out on the Amiga, I believe, back in the 1990s. And by the same developers as the guys who did 4x4 Jam.
Invictus Games,
yeah. So it's an interesting... interesting history to it. I think it was overlooked at the time. I've been playing the Dreamcast version for quite a while now. The introduction sequence is worth buying the game for alone. And that is not me being sort of making a ridiculous statement. It is literally one of the greatest introduction sequences to a game ever.
Mike, did you play the updated version? Is there any difference between the one that we played earlier?
I have not played the updated version yet.
Okay.
I have not. So it's on my agenda for the week coming. I've got a week off work. So I believe it's the final release version, isn't it?
The
original, it had a few bugs in the version I have played. So it'd be good to see if they can sort of even them out. It is tough. I will say people who were expecting sort of an easy game, they're not going to get their request because it's a tough game. But those who like flashback and another world, it's that sort of style of game. And it looks like an Amiga game. You know, anyone who's sort of played Amiga, especially a CD32 sort of game, it has that sort of look to it.
Yeah.
A very late 90s futuristic sort of dystopian world, but it looks lovely.
I must say, I do have to hand, you know, I have to take my hat off to Josh Bod for keeping these, this kind of, what's the word? They're keeping it kind of going, do you know what I mean, by releasing these new games. I mean, nobody else is doing this. I mean, some studios might release like a game, but Josh probably doing this like, you know, five or six at a time, and you know, some of them are a bit dodgy, you know, some of the emulation is a bit off, but some of them, especially things like Fate of Black, I'm really intrigued to see how that turns out. I'm not entirely taken by the box art that they are going with. I don't know if you've seen this. It's because I believe the reason for this is that the original files, you know, the high res files for the box art for Fate of Black have been lost.
Yeah.
So they've basically commissioned an artist to come up with a new kind of, almost like an anime style box art, and they're not even calling it Fate of Black, they're calling it Flashback 2.
They've changed it. If you look now, they've actually changed it. So the artwork now actually says Flashback instead of Fate of Black 2.
Oh, does it?
Yes. I noticed this the other day.
Okay, interesting.
So it looks as though they've changed it. Whether this is because of some kind of feedback, I'm not quite sure. I'm going to now look it up and make sure that I'm not making it up.
Yeah.
But...
The original box art for Fate to Black wasn't exactly phenomenal, though, was it?
I'm struggling to remember what it looked like. I'm just going to have a quick Google.
It was black, wasn't it? It was just pretty dull, and some horrendous 90s-style 3D model of a person from memory.
Fate to Black.
I remember playing it on Platinum on the PlayStation.
Yeah, I played it on the PlayStation. I borrowed it from a friend, and I wasn't... Because I was a massive fan of Flashback.
Is the Dreamcast version a port of the PlayStation one or the PC? Presumably the PC one, I'm guessing, right?
I've asked Philippe, who runs Josh Prod, and he's been a bit kind of secretive about Flashback because it Fate of Black even because apparently he keeps saying it's a work in progress. What that means, I don't particularly know, but I'm sure we'll find out when it launches. Oh yeah, I found the Fate of Black. Oh yeah, it's a bit shit, that, isn't it? It's just like the big logo with Conrad Hart kind of holding his gun. Yeah, it's not
yeah.
But they have changed the. So I've just had a check. They have changed it, so it is now Fate to Black. The artwork is Fate to Black. Mm-hmm. They removed, because if anyone knows what we're talking about, originally when they released the new artwork, it said Flashback 2, and then Fate to Black in very small subtitles underneath, which didn't make much sense really, because although the game is a sequel to Flashback, it's not really known as a sequel to Flashback, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So they have changed it now. But the artwork isn't great, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
The artwork for the Escapee seems to have is a bit of an interesting dystopian sort of future style look, a bit of a Blade Runner style, which is quite nice. And the character they've drawn on the front cover of The Escapee is an actor. I can't remember his name. Played Guy of Gisborne in Robin Hood. I should know his name.
what in Maid Marian or in the actual?
No, in film? The film Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. It's my wife's one of my favourite actors, and I can't remember his name. Got a really deep voice.
Let me. I'm on Google. I might as well have a look. Guy of Gisborne.
While you're doing that, I'm presuming they're going to put the Dreamcast blue banner on top of these box arts as well, right? Because it seems a bit weird that they've always done that in the older releases, but in the newer ones of these mock-ups they've shown, they haven't put the Dreamcast.
That's a good bloody point, actually. I noticed that.
Because it's...
I had not noticed it.
Michael Wincott. Is that him?
Michael Wincott.
I didn't know who he was. I would never have liked his name. Robin Hunt's Prince of Thieves.
I think that was one of a big part of the appeal, certainly for the original Josh Prod releases, was that I know the PSLR release was phenomenal from the detail perspective, but I mean, looking at the box art for the original games that they released, I mean, to the untrained eye, you'd never know any different. They just look like they could have been released in 2002 or 2001 or whatever. So yeah, I think it'll be a bit disappointing if they don't have the...
Going off previous releases from Josh Prod, I think they probably will, because the Flashback game that they released recently, which is brilliant, by the way, I know I've gone on about this before on the podcast and on the actual site as well, with all the extra features and whatnot. But the packaging on that was really good, really professional, you know, with all the manual and everything like that. So I can't see them like deviating too far from that with this new set of releases. Right. Have either of you two had any experience with Bang Bang Busters?
So for writing the new guide, I've gone to an upcoming games list, and I've sort of looked into videos of it.
Right.
It looks pretty good. It's very arcadey and very much like games that like an old arcade game. Talk about yourselves. I remember.
It looks a little bit like. Is it like you know the original Mario Brothers where you had to like fight each other? Is that what it kind of looks like?
It's a bit like Bubble Bobble sort of that kind of style to me. It's sort of a vertical sort of puzzle with one screen. Hmm. You clear the one screen and that's sort of it. It looks alright. It's nothing which is going to redefine games on Dreamcast, but. It's an interesting and something we haven't seen before. You know, we've long gone past that bit where everyone says that every single game comes out on Dreamcast and the indies are shooters.
Yeah.
So it's another example of a genre.
But you can bet your bottom dollar people will complain.
Of course they will. Because people are assholes.
It's not a 3D racing game.
It's a shame we haven't got a Canara Rush because that game looked amazing. But I'm hoping that's going to be on the next run. I think they've hinted that there's going to be another run, fourth run at least. I think we know at least five games that are going to be on it anyway. So it's not surprising.
Fortnite, yeah.
Fortnite. Hey, you never know.
The battle royale of four people online.
That'd be amazing. That'd be amazing.
Tongue in cheek, but I would like to see, I mean, especially as the online community is growing, I mean, I've spent the last couple of months playing regularly with people online. I think, you know, I know it indie dev for the Dreamcast in itself is a niche enough market, but I think it would be really great to see someone just, even if it's a really basic thing, to bring out a modern online game. Because to my knowledge, there's been nothing that's been online compatible that's come out since the original batch of games. So I cross my fingers that will happen at some point.
Maybe that's why Slave's delayed so long for. Maybe they're putting a multiplayer into it.
Yeah, maybe.
Isn't Ooga Booga back online?
It is.
Yes.
Yeah, because that's probably the closest thing to Fortnite, isn't it, on the Dreamcast?
Yeah.
Right. It's sort of from an aesthetic point of view anyway. Maybe not from the building thing.
I was going to say, but... I mean, you're clutching straws there, Tom. I mean, if I was doing a journalistic interview with you, it would be like, you know, Tom claims that Fortnite is on Dreamcast in the guise of whatever. Or first Battle Royale game for Dreamcast already out or something like that.
Talking of games online, very, very briefly, I know it's another segue in the conversation, but me and James played Star Lancer the other night.
Oh, yes, I couldn't make it, but I had it.
amazing. I haven't played Star Lancer online before, and I was massively impressed by the smoothness of it. It was really, really good. Really,
so what is it like, an online? Is it like a dogfight? Is it one versus one? Yeah. Or what? Yeah.
Oh, some of the modes. It's got loads of multiplayer modes. Some of them sound absolutely amazing. Yeah,
we definitely need to do it with at least four of us, because of the online modes. It's so sad, you know, looking back at games like this, and there's a few other examples, and you look at all these games that were phenomenal and work so well online, and it's so sad to look back and think that, you know, barely, probably dozens of people played some of these game modes back in the day and in its time. And it's like, I've been playing a metric ton of Monaco Grand Prix online recently, which was obviously a very specific PAL-only re-release of a game with an online mode in, that, as far as I'm aware, came out pretty late in the day for Dreamcast anyway, so it couldn't have sold many. But I'd almost guarantee that there'd be more people playing that game in the last 6 months online than ever. And it's just, it's really sad to look back at that, because
You know, James, it's funny you mentioned Monaco Online. I was reading something online a couple of weeks ago about, it was from an old forum thread that had long been closed. I can't even remember which site it was on, but apparently when Monaco Online was released, the developer didn't actually know that it had been released.
Amazing.
Because Ubisoft released it, but the developer didn't know that it had been released. So they were kind of like...
That's interesting in itself, though, Tom, because there are so many differences between the original Monaco Online and the original Monaco GP and then Monaco GP Online. Yeah. I assumed all along that the online game was just obviously the old game, but with an online mode thrown in. But there are so many changes to the actual gameplay. Like, there's no edit functionality in the online version. The championship mode, you can't select drivers or anything. It's just all team stuff. And I will say, though, as a diehard Formula One fan, the amount of inconsistencies in that game with the imagery that they use kills me. But anyway, that's another topic for another podcast, maybe.
Okay. Let's move on to let's do a quick kind of pivot from games that are coming to the Dreamcast to games that were on the Dreamcast and are now on other consoles. I am, of course, talking about the new remasters of Shenmue 1 and 2, which are coming to consoles this year. Again, this is not new news, but we haven't done a podcast since this was announced. So, the internet went into meltdown when this was announced, and rightly so. Obviously, there are a lot of Shenmue fans out there to whom this package of two games on one disc will no doubt appeal. And it has, you know, people have spoken with their wallets, because I believe it's the most pre-ordered game on Amazon at the moment, or one of the top five at least. So that's interesting. Have either of you guys taken a plunge and pre-ordered this?
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got an Xbox One pre-order in. Again, it's hugely nostalgically driven. I've got a funny feeling there are going to be a lot of people that have never played Shenmue and heard all about it and go to play it in 2018 and maybe won't enjoy it as much as it probably would have been enjoyed back in 1999.
Be careful, yeah. James. The Shenmue community will...
I'm fully aware of that.
No, it's a good point, James. I mean, sorry to cut you off there, but my feelings about Shenmue have been well documented on this podcast many times. I think it's an interesting game. It's a technical showcase for the Dreamcast hardware. I didn't particularly enjoy playing the game, I must say. And I certainly don't think it's the best game of all time, which a lot of people claim it to be. And just to reiterate what you said there, I think there are a lot of people who maybe have never experienced Shenmue before who have been caught up in this hype train, because that's what it is essentially, and are like, wow, Shenmue. And they're thinking it's going to be like Grand Theft Auto 3 or something, Grand Theft Auto 4 or whatever, you know, a big open world where you wander around and speak to people and blah, blah, blah. And to a certain extent, it is like that, but there's a lot of limitations, because it's a game from 2001, 2002, do you know what I mean?
And that's,
I think that'll come through.
Back in the day, it was phenomenal. You know, it was we'd never seen it before, and it was kind of, you know, this is just so different from everything else. And I think that's, you know, you hit the nail on the head, Tom. There's been, I'm so exhausted of open world games these days that, you know, if I see a linear platformer or adventure game, that a reviewer will mark it down because it's kind of, oh, it's all very linear, could be completed in a few hours. I'm like, that's the game for me these days, because I'm so fed up of like walking around these huge open worlds with about a million different side quests open. But that's just me. But I mean, I think, yeah, it's one of those games that I just feel, I don't know, for me, there's a lot of similarity here, even though they're completely different games, with something like GoldenEye on the 64. It was an outstanding game back in the day. It revolutionized what first-person shooters were all about. You know, everybody who kind of was a gamer in the 90s has got some sort of story about playing GoldenEye multiplayer or whatever, or really enjoying the campaign. And I've been, you know, guilty of this. One weekend, you know, friends come over, oh, well, we'll plug the N64 and have some GoldenEye. And it's horrific nowadays.
I think that's a very good point. And I think with Shenmue, I think the problem with Shenmue is that people are looking at it, it's being sold as this open world experience, and it's not. It never really was. You've got to look at it more as being an adventure game, sort of an evolution of the adventure sort of genre, and then the game makes sense. If you look at it as a Grand Theft Auto precursor, it's not. And I think it's not the right pace. It's not got the same, you know, style as that. And I think that's why the game doesn't necessarily hit with some people.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, I think it'll be interesting to see how this... I'll probably buy it eventually. I've not pre-ordered it, but when it comes out, I'll most likely get hold of it just out of curiosity more than anything, just to see how faithful it is to the Dreamcast original. I'm wondering which version of the games they'll actually use. You know, obviously with the first one, there was only the Dreamcast game, but with with the sequel, obviously there's the Xbox.
I presume it's the Xbox, simply because of the fact that they've obviously got the voice acting and stuff in, and it'd be quicker, I presume. I don't know. I don't see why they would do a Dreamcast version.
Yeah. Well, it's not a remaster or anything, is it? It's up-res, but it's not going to be completely rewritten. So,
I think from a Dreamcast point of view, I think one of the more interesting things for us is that will they release some kind of limited edition in Dreamcast packaging? That's what I'm hoping for.
Well, they've done with the Sonic Mania re-release, it's got the Mega Drive cover, hasn't it? You can flip around. So yeah, that would be really nice. To be honest with you, I completed Shenmue. I never owned it, actually. It was a friend of mine had it back in the day, and he lent it to me, and I remember spending like a week nonstop playing it. I didn't particularly find it that memorable. Like I'm the part of the reason why I'm going to be picking this version up is because I am interested in Shenmue 3 if and when it ever comes out. I never played 2, so it just provides a nice easy way for me to be able to play through 1 and 2 together before 3 comes out. So
I think that's one of the major plus points to this re-release is the fact that a vast majority of people never played 2. You know, even with it being on the Xbox as well, you know, the figures for the Dreamcast right at the tail end of its life, you know, people were ditching them left, right, and centre. And that's right when Shenmue 2 hit. I don't actually know the sales figures for Shenmue 2, the PAL version anyway, but they can't have been that high. So the vast majority of people probably never experienced it. It is a better game than the first one, I will say that.
Yes.
Much better game. But I'd be quite interested to see if they put any like extras in, you know, like any kind of like concept art and you know, documentaries or anything like that, stuff about the production of the game and how they went about creating this, you know, really kind of rich and detailed game world for the time.
I think they've got a lot of the guys of the community involved, and a lot of them are involved in Shenmue Dojo and stuff, and I think some of the like Shenmue Online, the cancelled game, and sort of the Japanese mobile ones as well that came afterwards.
Yeah.
I think all that content, if that's not included, I'd be surprised. But again, it's a Sega. You know what I mean? They've put these Mega Drive collections out without any extra content.
Okay.
They do the same thing.
Just to let you know, sales figures, they are super low for Shenmue 2. So the Dreamcast version, which was that Japanese only release?
It was Japanese and PAL.
It was PAL as well, was it? Okay. Yeah. So I've only got... So Japanese numbers were 150,000.
Uh-huh.
And the Xbox version was total combined regions of 320,000.
Wow.
So that's not bad. That's better than I thought it was going to be.
Have you got any sales figures for the PAL version of the Dreamcast?
I don't. I've only got Dreamcast. I've only got the Japanese, which was, as I said, 150,000. So,
in the grand scheme of things, that is pretty low, isn't it? Like, especially when you think about now, when games don't, if they don't like sell 10 million units, it's a failure. Do you know what I mean?
No.
I mean, that's less than 500,000 copies in total on both platforms. That's quite alarming. Obviously, there's the PAL as well, which we're not taking into consideration, but I'd be very surprised if it was more than, say, 100,000 on PAL.
Mm.
That's amazing. I was looking at something recently. What was it? It was a website I found. It's another one of those websites that's like not been updated for like about a decade. But it had all like sales figures for different games, and some of the sales figures for some of the games are really, really low. Like even things like Metropolis Street Racer, like.
Yeah,
ridiculously low sales.
25, it's like 15,000,
something like that.
Yeah.
I know we spoke about in the past about the Japanese version of Spirit of Speed that sold. Was it 73?
22.
Copies?
22.
Wow,
that's brilliant.
I think I saw that, something ridiculous like that.
Yeah. So that's fascinating. The sales figures. Obviously, I would imagine this re-release or remaster, whatever you call it, will probably sell probably into the millions. Just because of the install base of the two consoles it's coming out on, and also the kind of the hype behind the Shenmue sort of mark.
The interesting thing is, I obviously work in retail, and so I'm a manager in retail. So I've told my staff to sell Shenmue 1 and 2 as a pre-order, and so they haven't got a clue what the game is. You know, they don't even know what computer games are. But I've had a couple of guys, and I spoke to them, and a couple of them were sort of quite random. I spoke to one guy, and I said, "Are you going to get Shenmue 1 and 2 on pre-release?" And, no, I'm not going to do it. I've got it on Dreamcast. And I was like, for a second in the shop going, do I talk about Dreamcast, this random guy in my shop? Because he's gonna say to me, have I got a Dreamcast? And I'm going to have to say to him, I've got 1,000 games. It's going to get really awkward. I'm going to look sad.
I was going to say, you should have said, do you know who I am? Do you know who I am?
Produce the book from my back pocket. This is the book. I wrote the book on a Dreamcast. Thank you very much.
And then you find out it's a guy working from Sega and issues you a cease and desist on the spot for that book.
Someone told me something recently. Somebody was in. Somebody went to CEX, a branch of CEX, and he was talking to the guy behind the counter about Dreamcast. And the guy started going on about the Dreamcast junkyard. And then he messaged me on Facebook and said, I was in CX and this guy was talking about the Dreamcast Junkyard. I was talking about the Dreamcast Junkyard to this guy behind the counter. I was like, wow, that's awesome.
depends what they were saying about us, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, obviously, yeah. But apparently it was quite good. It was all right, it's all shite, you know. Okay, so Shenmue Remasters coming soon. Generally, I think we're all
Is there a release date? Is there a release date yet?
Is it? September-ish.
I want to say it's earlier than that, but give me 1 second to pull up my Amazon order.
August, maybe?
I'm thinking August. Oh, I've ordered a lot of stuff on Amazon, apparently. Scroll. It doesn't say. Great.
I would not be surprised if that was put back to the 20th anniversary of the Japanese Dreamcast.
Oh, what? The end of November, whenever it was?
I would not be surprised.
Yeah, I assume we'll get some sort of an update at E3 for it, right? I'm sure they'll talk about it. It doesn't have a release date on Amazon, but how reliable
will,
Amazon?
Will they have any time at E3 in between all the Battle Royale games?
Yeah, true. Shenmue Battle Royale.
I was just about to say that.
Booga Booga remastered.
Yeah. And it's interesting as well, just on one final note on this, is it's interesting that they're releasing it on the Xbox One, but Shenmue 3's going to be on the PS4 exclusive.
I don't think it'll be a PS4 exclusive now. No. I'm pretty sure that that will end up being an Xbox thing. I, as an aside on that, Tom, this has been the podcast for kind of tenuous links. I remember being pretty annoyed with. I mean, I'm a bit of an Xbox fan. I've got a PlayStation, but I would call myself more of an Xbox fanboy than a PS fanboy. And I remember being a bit annoyed, actually, with the whole Shenmue 3 reveal, because it was kind of like Sony wanted to put their money where their mouth was and sort of say, yeah, we're going to make the move to bring Shenmue 3 back and we're going to take the risk. But actually, it's just going to be a Kickstarter. So here's the link. We'll wash our hands of it. Off you go. And if you guys put in a few million into it, then we'll come back on board and actually publish the thing. So yeah, I would be very, very, very surprised if Shenmue 3 doesn't end up coming out on everything. As I said, even if it even if it comes out at all, because we've had very little. I know it's just been delayed, but we've had very little information on that game.
On the topic of Xbox fanboyism, I'd be quite interested to know whether this makes me count as an Xbox fanboy. I've got two original Xboxes and an Xbox 360. I haven't got an Xbox One, but does that qualify me as a fanboy?
Yes.
It does?
That's fair.
Excellent. Yeah,
I think so.
Okay, cool.
What does fanboy mean?
I don't know.
Topic of the next podcast.
I've literally got every single console from like Commodore 64 onwards, including a Jaguar, Tom. So
nobody likes to show off. I'm pleased to hear that you've got the Jag, you know, the 64-bit beating powerhouse of anyone's collection.
Tom, no one wants to hear about a Jaguar. Leave it alone. Leave it alone.
Let's talk about another console. That's the Nintendo Switch. And the reason I'm jumping to the Nintendo Switch is because, or switching to the Nintendo Switch. See.
You need to put the sound effect in there, the whole click sound effect when you think, yeah.
wait a sec. I've actually got my Switch here.
Take a timestamp. Take a timestamp.
There you go. Could you hear that?
Absolutely seamless. Absolutely seamless.
Yes. This is the recent release of Treasures Ikaruga on the Nintendo Switch. Have either of you guys played it?
I've not played the Switch version. I honestly didn't play the Dreamcast version either. I had it on GameCube and played it on there. But yeah, the whole genre really of the shoot 'em up. I refuse to say shmup. I hate the word shmup. It never really appealed to me. But yeah, I can certainly see the appeal for other people in them.
Yeah, well, this is the second game that has come to the Switch that started on home console anyway, on the Dreamcast after Zero Gunner 2. The difference between Zero Gunner 2 and Ikaruga, though, is that Zero Gunner 2 for the Switch was kind of completely created from scratch because the original files were lost or something. So it was almost like an imitation of the Dreamcast game, as opposed to being the original Dreamcast game just shoehorned onto the Switch. Ikaruga, though, is pretty much spot on. I can't find any faults with it. The only fault I've found so far is when you meet some of the larger bosses, when they explode, there's a little bit of slowdown in handheld mode. But apart from that, it's as you were, really. I looked through the credits, and it looks like the port was handled by a studio called Zerio, which is a Japanese porting house, and it looks like they may have relied on the Android version of this game. So it's not specifically based on the Dreamcast version, but I just thought it was cool that another game that really started on the Dreamcast, I know it's an arcade game, but started on the Dreamcast on consoles, has made its way to the Switch. And I'm quite impressed with the amount of extras they've put in. There's not like a massive like gallery or anything like that, or like a making of documentary or anything, but there's some interesting features, such as the way that you can change the orientation of the Switch to Tata mode, so you get rid of the borders, you know, when you hold it in horizontal mode. So you can actually use one of the Joy-Cons and set the Switch on its side and just use it like a proper Tata monitor.
So I was going to ask about that, because I've seen someone is making an accessory that is basically a way that you can put the screen in the vertical mode, but it also allows you to clip the Joy-Cons on either side of it. Obviously, they don't charge; it's just like a clip. But I think that would be quite good for those sorts of games.
Definitely, yeah. It's a bit sort of strange how Nintendo themselves haven't released something like that. So you could put you could slide the Switch like sort of main console unit down into the thing, and then you could slide the Joy-Cons onto the left and right of the screen as it's in sort of portrait mode. Yeah, that'd be really cool. I suppose the only thing with that though is that if it was kind of in the middle, you'd be blocking the vent on the top of the Switch. So I suppose you'd have to kind of have it further down, maybe. Yeah. But I can certainly see that. I can totally see that being doable. But the reason I bring this up is I just wondered what, you know, if any there's any other sort of Dreamcast games that you think would be a good fit for the Switch. I know James, that you have got extensive kind of writing, background with the Switch on various Switch websites and things. So and obviously with Switch Player as well. So you're probably the the more sort of knowledgeable here about this kind of thing. But is there anything you'd like to see on the Switch from the old Dreamcast library?
Power Stone, please. I really want to see Power Stone. And yeah, like, I know they did a collection on PSP,
I want to
say.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
But I'd love to see something like that again. Power Stone was the first Dreamcast game I ever played on a Japanese console before the system came out. And it was just so refreshing compared to most sort of beat 'em ups at the time. But I think, you know, that sort of game would be really, really good, especially with the kind of the Switch's portable nature, you know, with the whole, you know, just hand some Joy-Cons out, put the thing on the desk, and then you've got two or four people playing Power Stone on the go.
Online.
Battle Royale mode. Power Stone Battle Royale would be phenomenal. You know? 100 people drop into an arena. No, I think Power Stone would be really good. And the only other one for me, again, it's a personal favorite, and a genre that we're really lacking of these days is House of the Dead 2 would be amazing. I know we obviously had some House of the Dead stuff on the Wii using the pointers, but you can obviously do the same thing with the Joy-Cons, or a similar thing with the Joy-Cons, and have some sort of a light gun game, which would be pretty awesome. But then the obviously bringing back Fantasy Star Online would always be welcome, I'm sure, with a lot of people.
I did do an article on the main Dreamcast Junkyard site quite a while back now, games that I'd like to see on the Switch from the Dreamcast library, and two that kind of resonate with me would be Outrigger, because even though that was a multiplayer online shooter, primarily, the PAL version didn't have any online options. So I'd love to be able to play that, you know, a proper first-person shooter with, you know, other people over the internet on the Switch. That'd be amazing. And the other one would be Daytona USA 2001. Again, if that had some kind of multiplayer option with, you know, like maybe like 8 or 10 players all competing on these tracks would be amazing. But as well as that, The Switch doesn't have any, other than Gear Club, doesn't have any kind of real world races. I know Daytona is not exactly real world, but it's a good approximation of the real world. I'd love to just see some, you know, proper old school Sega arcade racing on the Switch.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike?
I think two stand out for me. I think Rez would be amazing in handheld. Yeah. Have we had a handheld version of Rez?
I don't think it's not on the Vita. It's not on the PSP or the Vita.
I think it'd be really good. Obviously, there's vibration in the Switch, isn't there? So it sort of gives you that sort of feel. I think it'd be really, really good. Yeah. And I think for me, a game I mentioned earlier on, Cosmic Smash.
Yeah.
I think it's a game which needs more recognition. I think Switch is a perfect opportunity.
That'd be good with like the Joy-Cons, you know, to use the
exactly. Yeah.
That'd be good.
It's
interesting you mentioned Rumble, actually, Mike. One thing I didn't mention earlier about when I was talking about Ikaruga is the Rumble in the Switch Joy-Cons. It's flipping fantastic. The way that the HD Rumble, I've never really bought into that kind of HD Rumble
Same.
Thing until I played Ikaruga. When you die and when you restart, the Rumble in the Joy-Cons, it kind of matches the music, and it's hard to explain. It kind of vibrates sort of from the back to the front of the Joy-Con. It's just really subtle, but really well done.
That makes me think Rez would be even better. That sounds like a perfect machine for Rez now.
I might try that, Tom, because I must admit that's one of the biggest sort of letdowns for me, is the whole this HD Rumble stuff that everyone was hyping up when the Switch first came out. And I played 1-2-3 Switch, that's obviously based around the Rumble.
Is that the sequel to 1-2 Switch?
Yeah, yeah.
1-2-3 Switch.
It was supposed to be, you know, it's the game where you're supposed to be able to feel how many ice cubes are kind of in a glass by sort of moving the Joy-Con around. And I was just sort of sat there going, like, either I've got really fat hands and can't feel anything in it, or I've just got, it's just not as good as it is. And so, yeah, it'd be interesting to see that, to try it out, and if you think it's worthy.
Yeah, it's worth giving a go. I mean, it's I think it's like $13.99 or something, which is a hell of a lot cheaper than the Dreamcast version is. You can also get it on like Xbox Live, and I think it's on Android. Well, obviously it's on Android and on Steam as well. But yeah, to have it like, you know, on the go, I think it's a worthy purchase personally. I will be doing a comparison article on the Dreamcast Junkyard when I can be bothered to. Capture some screens from the Dreamcast version. So there's that coming soon. But yeah, guys, I think that kind of brings us to a natural close of proceedings, unless there's anything else you'd like to discuss. Nope, I'll take that as a no. but yeah, I think it's been a really interesting episode. We've covered a lot of ground and we've spoken about a lot of things. Is there anything you would like to like pimp or give links to, James? That you've done
not really
online.
I'll just give a pimp to the like you said, the amazing work that PC Wizard and Shu and everyone else is doing over in Dreamcast Live, and mm-hmm. and I think the more people we can get involved in online games, the better. One of my goals is to try and set up, you know, a regular Dreamcast Junkyard online sort of weekly or bi-weekly session where we just play whatever's hot at that particular time. So
It might be good. It might be worth setting up something on the actual blog itself, you know, like an extra section where we have the times and the dates. Because I know that the guys from DC Talk, they organise it every Sunday. But yeah, I mean, not everybody accesses DC Talk, and it might be good to get some involvement from the Facebook group and the Facebook page and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely something we can look at, definitely.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I know you've talked about the Dream Pie in the past, and you know, I really can't emphasize how amazing that piece of kit is. That it's you know, people probably are afraid to try and get back online with a Dreamcast because of they probably think it's going to be an absolute nightmare to get working again. But it literally is plug and play, you know, Wi-Fi as well these days, and it's. Yeah, it's such a good experience to go back online nowadays. And as Mike said, you know, some games like Star Lancer, they run superbly well online, and it's just it's great to be able to, actually to play an online game without having a headset on and someone telling me they shagged my mum. at least you've got to wait till you get back into the lobby and they've got to type it out using an on-screen keyboard. It's
I'm going to just wait a sec. Shag. Shit, error, delete. Oh, must got give props to Luke Benstead as well for creating the whole thing in the first place. Cool. Okay, guys, that'll do for this particular episode. Thank you very much for listening to this episode 59 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. You can find all of the stuff we've been speaking about on our main website, which is www.thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk. You can get involved in the chats on our Facebook group. That's facebook.com/groups/thedreamcastjunkyard. We're on Twitter at the DC Junkyard. I'm on Twitter at Tom Lee C. Mike, you're on Twitter.
@space_turnip.
Excellent. And James, you are on Twitter.
Agile Harvey.
Fantastic. Please feel free to join in all the stuff we do on social media. And we will see you on the next episode of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. Everybody say goodbye. Bye.
Bye.
Here we go.
Please stop this disc now.